T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and lift off.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the top.
You're listening to the Flourish and Thrive Radio Show, episode 16. Hey there, Kate Hartley here, and welcome to another episode of the Flourish and Thrive Radio Show. Thank you so very, very much for tuning in. This is the show where I interview guests whose stories will inspire you to take the steps you need to create the life you want and educate you with tips and strategies to help you overcome your roadblocks. My guests all have one thing in common, and that is the passion to consistently take action, to follow their dreams, and achieve their goals in life. On this show, you also hear what's working and not working in people's lives, the challenges they face, and more importantly, how they overcome those challenges using their resourcefulness to get to where they want to be. Before I get into the details of my well beyond ordinary guest today, remember that you will be able to listen to the replay of this interview via my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/flourishtherapy.co.uk, and also on my website, which is again flourishtherapy.co.uk, and there's a tab on the main menu bar for the radio show. So today's episode, I can't wait to introduce you to my guest today. Her name is Tambra Lane, and Tambra is a certified professional coach, speaker, trainer, author, and high performance expert. Her life is dedicated to helping others to find their way out of stressful circumstances through the blocks that have held them back into a life where they bring their best game, live in a high performance mode, and create an extraordinary life. Tambra helps people become unstoppable when they want to give up, give in, and get out. In 2001, Tambra lost the love of her life to cancer. When her husband died, her world came crashing down around her, and she didn't know how to go on without him. After much soul searching and diving deep into the question about what matters to her most, she realized that all that matters was helping others. And I love how Tambra, despite all her success and achievements in life so far, describes as her greatest accolade as the life she has rebuilt for herself, finding peace with her loss, living a life of choice, and believing in herself 100%. So I'm so looking forward to introducing Tambra to you. Without further ado, Tambra, welcome so much to the Flourish and Thrive Radio Show. And how are you today?
Feeling absolutely fabulous, Kate, and so happy to be here with you.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing your time with us. You've got such a wealth of experience to share with our listeners. I'm sure they're going to learn so much by listening to you here on the show today. It's clear that you're one of life's givers and you gain so much joy from helping others. So, would you mind sharing some of your story with us to say kind of what has caused you to get to where you are today?
Absolutely. I'd love to. You know, I grew up as one of those people that just always had a zest for life and really embraced the sunshine and the opportunities and looked for extraordinary experiences to be able to have no matter what I was doing. And that was just a path that I followed in a way that I showed up naturally. And that was, you know, just how things went. And I had the great fortune to, as you say, meet the love of my life. And I got to marry him and we had 10 years together. 3 years before he passed, he was diagnosed with cancer. And obviously it made huge changes to our life on all levels. And we really did struggle, even though I feel like we were fairly well resourced in a lot of different ways. And so when I lost him to cancer, I literally lost my will to live. I was 38 years old. We had certain plans for a family, plans to rebuild our home. And we were both working in the film industry together, truly kind of living a Hollywood love story. So when I was left with a really blank slate. I just didn't know where to begin. And I think the hardest part was, you know, spending the next 6 years really stuck in grief-related depression and, you know, highly stressed over the loss and trying to figure out what to do next. And it just wasn't my nature, you know, it wasn't truly who I was. And so I was able to navigate through the process using a lot of different tools and resources, and ultimately it was taking my coach training and going through the training program that really helped me get much more back to me.
Yeah.
That and salsa dancing.
Oh, salsa dancing. Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I finally, you know, kind of stepped out of my little cocoon that I had built around myself and realized that I was, you know, done a lot of isolating, and I'd always wanted to try it. And I love to dance. I was a figure skater when I was young. And so it was, you know, really kind of my first step out to reconnecting with the world again. And so as I went through the process, I was able to kind of look back and see the steps that I'd taken, see what had worked, see what hadn't worked. And I really became driven to make a difference for others and to help them navigate through times of transition and big change in their lives so that they can make the most of it, even when it's something that is, you know, difficult and tragic and, you know, all consuming.
So you became a coach after the death of your husband, is that right?
Yes, up until that time, I'd worked for about 20 years in Hollywood in a variety of different ways. Yeah.
Go on, give us a brief synapse or synopsis of what you did, because that, you know, everybody hears Hollywood and thinks, wow, come on, give us the dirt.
you know, I loved it. It was a great experience. You know, it's just like life. You meet some people who are absolutely, truly amazing, and then you meet some people who are a little bit more difficult to work with.
Yeah. Yes.
So, but I think the thing that I took most from it was, you know, the time I spent working with screenwriters. I was a development executive for a while at Sony Studios, and so getting to work with writers and really studying the process of story.
Yes.
Has helped me a lot in the work I do with my clients, because I really dug deep into the hero's journey. And so I was able to actually pull on that when I was going through my own experience, because, you know, the story of the hero's journey is, of course, being handed a task that you're unwilling to accept, that you don't really want to accept. You didn't choose it.
Mm-hmm.
But there really is only two ways to go. You either sit down and give up.
Yep.
Or you move forward. And so I really loved having the opportunity to have the tools of understanding that we write our stories.
Sure.
We all can live the hero's journey, and that we're not meant to do that journey on our own. You know, the hero's journey is very much about the Yoda and the Obi-Wan Kenobi. you know, we need those people in our lives. And that's often how I see, you know, coaches and, you know, people who are working in this helping profession like you and I are, to really help people move through times of challenge, change, and times of growth.
Well, do you know what? I think, you know, before we sort of get into the nitty gritty, you've just mentioned the role of coaches, and they are such a valuable resource. And often, I know you sort of, you think this way too, is that people aren't aware of how valuable a coach is, because they don't know what value they can bring to their life until they've approached them. So, you know, how would you say, how can hiring a coach be helpful in the first instance?
Well, I think I'm a really good example of the difference it can make. I personally am an action-oriented person, so mm-hmm. I like to take responsibility for creating the changes that I want in my life. You know, but when we're highly stressed, and obviously times of change can bring that stress on. When we're highly stressed, you really do need somebody to, first of all, help you deal with the stress, because stress is a huge impediment to our ability to make changes in our life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that later, and you and I can have a lot of conversation about that alone. And so when if you have a coach there to kind of hold that space when you're stuck, confused, overwhelmed, you know, and stress, that can be really helpful. Or when you've got an amazing goal. So the first coaches I ever worked with were athletic coaches.
And, yes, because you're an athlete from times before. So, you know, try and weave that into your story if you can, Tamra, because I just think, you know, I think because you know you've done it, it's not really important to you. But for people that haven't been a top athlete, it's fascinating to hear your story.
Well, you know, there's lots of people either have their children in sports of some kind, or even, you know, music lessons. Mm. The music teacher is, in essence, a coach.
Yep.
So typically when you sign up for something like that, you are coming into an arena that you have a desire to learn about, potentially to excel in, possibly to compete in and do well, and you don't know everything about it. In fact, you may know very little about it. So you really need the expertise of a coach who can educate you on the processes and the skills and the things that you need in order to grow and become good at that. And then also, you know, really great coaches understand how to work with the mindset.
Yeah.
Because so much of competition, so much of it comes down to where's your focus, you know, how mentally clear are you about what you're trying to achieve, and what thoughts are getting in the way that might be pulling your focus away or reducing your confidence, you know, knocking you down a little bit. So the mindset piece that coaches bring is extremely valuable. And it was interesting because when I started to look at becoming trained as a coach, and working with coaches around grief recovery, I was like, well, this is obvious to me now. You know, every time I wanted to learn a new skill, even when I was working in Hollywood, at one point when I was looking for new jobs, I hired a coach to help me get better at the interview process. When there was something where my knowledge, my skills, or my wisdom and experience reached its limit, and I knew I needed something more to take it to the next level, I hired a coach. And that always, you know, obviously added tools to my toolbox, but it also shortened down the time it took me to achieve that goal rather than trying to figure it out on my own.
I love that so much.
Yeah, definitely. So I think, you know, when people are ready and willing to become more aware about the life they're leading and the choices that they're making, and they want to be more conscious about every action, every decision, every thought, so that they can design their life and not just accept what comes and make it work, then that's the perfect time to be working with a coach.
Sure. And I agree with you so much. And it's not until recently, I mean, I've had various trials and tribulations, and I won't go into them now because you'll fall asleep, but and this is your time, but you know, there are times that I think, crikey, being a coach myself, and you know, the information that you can share with individuals that can just kind of turbo them to the goal that they want to achieve. And crikey, if I'd have known about the fact that coaches existed and that coaches in different fields existed, it would have transformed my life. It would have cut down the journey by such a huge amount of time. And also I'd have probably accomplished more than I would have done in the first place, and also had a framework that would have logically and hopefully reasonably unemotionally got me from A to Z. Because, you know, I think emotion and that fear factor is something that holds so many people back, and probably holds people back from actually approaching a coach in the first place. Because, you know, when you make that phone call, you're almost, you're putting your toes near the edge of that abyss. And if people don't like heights, they're not going to get close to the edge of the abyss. And sometimes a coach is the person that can help get you there and help you jump off safely. And then at the bottom you think, oh my god, you know, oh my goodness, I cannot believe that I just achieved this, and wow, do I feel better for it. And I think coaches are so valuable in the fact that they reveal aspects of your life that you wouldn't even know existed had you not met one.
Yeah, it's interesting. I liken it to actually the Hollywood model of, you know, you have a producer. When you're doing a big, big movie or project, you have a producer. And the mm-hmm. producer typically is involved right from the beginning with the vision.
Yeah.
You know, and they see, you know, and they work with the director to bring that vision into being. But really great producers are not the ones that are in there meddling and putting their fingers into everything. They're the ones that stand back and hold the vision so that all those wonderful creative people, the writer, the actors, the director, the costume designer, so all of them can bring their best to the game. And the only time that you step in is if somebody starts to, you know, poke holes in the bubble and threatens the vision, you know, to any degree. Mm-hmm. So, you know, really the coach is the same thing. It's, you know, I often feel like coaches have the ability to see the greatest potential in their clients when the client can't quite yet see that for themselves. The
sure.
client has a niggling, like, you know, they wouldn't make the call to find out about coaching in the first place if they didn't believe that they could have, do, or be something more. So there is that inside of them, but often they don't see the biggest version of themselves yet. And so as coaches, to be able to really help people grow to their potential, and then, you know, it's kind of like passing off the bubble, you know, once they get to a place of really seeing who they are and having the confidence and the resiliency and their new tools to just go out and step out and be who they are more fully, you know, and then you get to pass that over to the client. And that's the other thing I like about coaching is that, you know, with the educational pieces in it, you're actually learning tools, strategies, and processes that you can apply over and over again. So you don't have to be working with a coach for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, you can go in, you can do some coaching around a specific goal, strategy, learn those things, and then go away and apply it. You may come back if there's another huge, you know, step you want to take or things like that, come back from time to time. But it really does lead to self-efficacy. And your own ability to then move yourself through the processes that you've learned over and over again in different areas.
And I totally agree with you. And you know, with since you've become a coach, what do you think? How can you help people up level their life to fulfilling their absolute full potential?
Well, obviously, the, you know, critical number one piece is making sure that you know, people have a vision for what it is that they want. So creating the ideal.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
understanding, you know, where are you currently right now in your life, and what is it that you're looking to achieve that you don't have yet, and really coaching is all about helping you close the gap between those two things, so that you move closer and closer to your ideal until you achieve your ideal. And so, you know, that's really critical. So typically, you know, if somebody calls me and they're interested in working with me, then first of all, you know, I always do a free consultation call because
yeah.
it's important to understand what are their goals, help them clarify their goals, you know, and see if it's a good match. Because people have different styles of coaching. People have different areas of expertise of coaching. And so that's a, you know, very helpful step in strategy. And, you know, for me, the next piece is then also, you know, when they start to work with me is first of all, doing a stress assessment and finding out, you know, what are some of the critical stressors that could actually potentially create obstacles and blocks for them. And starting to work with those up front, because like I said, you know, the intricacies of behavior change, and anytime you're, you know, learning a new skill, going after a new goal, you're going to have to change your behavior in some way or another, because you can't keep doing what you're doing and
exactly.
get a different result.
Yeah.
So that's a behavior change. You know, and I've studied behavior change very closely for the last couple of years, particularly because I was fascinated by this, you know, process of, you know, it's not a lack of information. You know, where there's tons of information out there on things that you can do, actions you can take, strategies, and you know, if you want to change your diet, you know, there's lots of information on nutrition and all that kind of stuff. So then what stops people? It's not lack of information. It's their inability to implement the information.
Yeah.
So then it's looking at, well, what's missing then from your ability to implement it? and it's most likely, you know, an internal block of some kind, and stress can be one of those internal blocks. So I find that's a critical piece in helping people create the energy, the focus, the awareness to then be able to tackle their goal.
I know. I mean, I think stress affects all of our lives, and I think some of us deal with it better than others, and others, it's just, well, it can just crumble. It can make you crumble, can't it? So, you know, you mentioned a stress assessment. What do you actually cover in your stress assessment?
There's a couple that I work with. One of them is called the Energy Leadership Index Assessment, and it's an assessment that was created by the coaching school that I was trained at. And it really helps you understand your, who you are when you're not under stress. So all the strengths, abilities, mm-hmm. All the joy, all the passion, all the energy that you have for life when you're not under stress. And then it also gives you a profile of what happens when stress hits and what is your typical pattern of how do you deal with it, so that you can then start to see the implications of what it is you lose access to when you're stressed. So we typically lose access to our ability to think creatively, to communicate well with others, to be joyful, to be inspired, to feel safe.
Yes.
So... understanding what happens, and then helps you dig into identifying what are your personal unique stress triggers.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, because here's the thing: we hear it all the time, right? Oh my God, I'm so stressed.
I know,
and it's
totally.
Almost become like it's almost become a badge of courage these days, like something to be proud of. Oh, I'm so stressed. I'm so busy.
Yeah, or I'm busy. I'm busy.
Yeah.
But it means what? Which is,
you know, another way of creating. Exactly. So, it's important to take that I'm so stressed and tease it out and get very real and very clear about what factors are contributing to that stress.
Yeah.
How can I identify when it's coming on so that I can stop, take an inventory of what's going on so I can understand what's creating it, and then make a conscious choice. So I may decide that, you know, for this moment, I just need to be stressed, you know, or I may realize the costs. This is costing me my ability to think clearly. This is costing me the ability to think outside the box and come up with a really great solution to this challenge in this moment. It's costing me the ability to reach out and ask for help in this moment. Because often we isolate when we get into stressful situations.
Yes. Yeah.
So now you're at a choice point. And when you can make that conscious choice and you choose something different, you choose to come at it differently, then you're creating what I call an inspired action. Mm-hmm. And your action is being inspired by your bigger self, a joyful person who loves life, who, you know, has the resiliency and knows and has the confidence that they can get through this and make something of it somehow.
I love that. I was looking through your website earlier and yesterday, and one of the most important things for me personally that came through from your information is that we all have that choice, and we can't dictate what life chucks at us, but we can dictate how we choose to let it happen to us, to let it happen to affect us. And that doesn't mean, you know, say in your case where you lose the love of your life, you're still going to grieve him and you're still going to sense his loss so painfully. But eventually, when that grief has run its natural course, you know, you have that choice then to either then stay wallowed in that rut, or you have the choice to say, I'm living and I honor his life, and I'm going to go forth and help other people, which is what you appear to have done. And, you know, personally, from my point of view, I went through a very, very, what became a very messy divorce. And there were, I really understood why people self-harm through that time. I never did it, but I understood why they did it, because it just takes that emotional pain away. But ultimately, I think I was lucky, because I was already within the coaching industry. It made me realize that I actually had a choice as to how I let this affect me. And I could either let it keep me down there, and I could keep kicking myself and sort of, you know, decide to not take responsibility for my life. Or I could think, no, this has happened to me, but there are things that I can do to take my life to the next level and the next level and the next level. And, you know, and life flourishes. And I think naturally we have that propensity as human beings to survive. I think our survival instinct is so strong within us. But I think also a lot of people have lost that innate sense of having the ability to actually make that choice, whether they are victim to their life or whether they write the rule book within a certain degree.
Yeah, it's, you know, when you go through things like the situation you described, or, you know, or my loss, it can be all consuming, you know, especially in the early days when, yeah, you know, your world is rocked and it feels like you're walking on quicksand, and, you know, there's so many things that change to such a great degree.
Yes.
I've also worked a lot with cancer survivors and caregivers in that arena.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same thing happens when somebody's diagnosed with a severe chronic disease. It just has, you know, if you look at the wheel of life, it has an impact on almost every area, if not every area.
Yes.
So it can be very overwhelming. And certainly, you know, I had those moments where I could not see my way forward. And I think that, you know, I had the opportunity, I'd say about 3 or 4 years into my coaching, I had the opportunity to coach a new widow. Uh-huh. And it was fascinating because the process that she went through took her, you know, 6 months versus my 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And here's, you know, the kind of the approach is like thinking of it as a railroad track. So you got two tracks, and, you know, she had her grieving that was going on one track, and she understood that she was going to have these emotions, and, you know, most likely for many years. You know, there are times when I still miss Gary.
Yes.
Even though I'm, you know, now living and leading an amazing, extraordinary life, and I know he'd be thrilled that I was doing that. You know, but that you still loved that person.
Yes.
So there will be the grief, the grieving process, the feelings of grief, you know, and the loss kind of on that one track. It doesn't mean that you can't also at the same time in a parallel, you know, life be working on rebuilding your life.
Absolutely.
Or going after your next goal. And so, you know, part of that process is, first of all, giving yourself permission to do that, permission to take action, to move forward, permission to be happy again, permission to laugh, you know, permission to go out and date again.
Yeah.
And things like that when you're ready in your own time. But like me, this client felt a really strong desire to be taking action to begin to put pieces of what her new life looked like in place. And so we worked on that. We worked on those action strategies. And then, you know, when the movement forward brought up feelings of grief and emotion, then we worked through those as well. So I see coaching, and it's not surprising when you use this metaphor, as a dance. And mm-hmm. I feel like coaches that are really in tune with the process and their clients work in a way that often an action, outward action, they take a step forward, will bring up an internal response of some kind. And so it becomes this dance between the external, moving forward, and the internal of, yeah, you know, coming up against a fear or an obstacle or some stress. And now that takes us into the internal mindset, emotional landscape kind of arena. And we work in there. And then as that shift occurs, we become more energized and ready to take the next step forward. So it becomes this beautiful internal, external dance.
That is just such a lovely way of putting it, because it is, it's a bit of a waltz, isn't it? Because you're constantly meeting the other heart, you know, the other side of the emotion, but you're bringing it back with the slightly more optimistic and hopeful side of loss or challenge or stress. And I think life is a dance. It's, and I think the better the dancer, the easier you get through life. Do you, you're well beyond ordinary. Is that something that specializes particularly in stress, or is it something that encourages people to fulfill their potential, whatever their background or whatever their needs or concerns?
Obviously the stress piece is really critical to the process that I use, yeah. But it's more, I would say that's more, you know, built into the coaching experience and the programs that I, you know, design and the consulting and training that I do. So that's a piece of more of the process. The focus of Well Beyond Ordinary is really about people, you know, helping people live high performance lives. And, you know, really looking at everything that we do in life is a performance. You know, so how you get up and do anything, how you get out of bed in the morning is a performance. You know, if you get out of bed and you're groggy, you're not paying attention, you stub your toe, and then you have one of those thoughts of, oh my God, it's going to be one of those days. You know, that's one way to get out of bed. You know, but instead, if you, you know, get up with a nice sounding alarm that's not like that, you know.
Oh, they're awful.
Yeah, if you get up with, you know, something that's a little bit more, you know, I had one that was for a while that was chimes. So you get up with that and you take a moment and you focus just for a quick second even. What is my intention for the day?
Yeah.
What is one word that I would like to focus on and bring as a quality into my day today? What are the top, maybe kind of coming up with the top three things that you want to accomplish in the day and make sure those are your priorities? Just taking that, you know, 2 to 3 minutes to get focused and centered and then step mindfully out of bed, intending to have a great day. And being able to, you know, intend to have a great day and be ready to handle whatever comes your way, knowing that you can, is a whole different way to perform the act of getting out of bed.
I 100% agree with you. I do exactly the same thing. And also before I go to bed, I say my prayers, and I also try and think of several things, between 3 and 10 things that I'm really grateful for. And I guess a bit boring because it's nearly always my children, but I think it sets your mind up for happiness and gratitude. And I don't know whether how much you believe about energy and vibrational energy. That might be for another interview, but I just really believe that what you put out there, you get back. And that's why I think being grateful for your life as it is not only makes you realize how lucky you are, because, you know, in the Western world, we are so incredibly lucky. And I that's not disregarding people's hardships and losses. But on the whole, you know, our sense of security and our sense of well-being is so much better than people that have to live in a tin shack or a tent for the rest of their lives. And I think, you know, there is so much to be grateful for. My son's toilet leaked all over my living room ceiling a couple of weeks ago. And I was thinking, oh my goodness, I've got that mark. And, you know, the water's come through and it's so catastrophic. And then I thought, hang on, who am I kidding? You know, A, I have a ceiling. B, my son has a flushing toilet. And okay, it may have blocked. We had a power cut, so that's why it went through. But, you know, at the end of the day, we were so fortunate. And there are so many people that don't even have a ceiling or don't have a flushing toilet. So it really made me realize, actually, there are two ways of looking at everything, which I think is probably, you know, what you're saying too, is you have a choice. You can either look at the good or you can look at the bad. And by looking at the good, it raises, personally, I think it raises your energetic vibration, but it also makes you spot the other good things in your life as well, because it's so easy to become complacent about the luxury that we have in life.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting because you and I actually have quite a quite a bit of common background training. So I'm also a Reiki master. So I've done a lot of work in energy, and I've got my hypnotherapy training as well, and things like that. And you know, the energy that we show up in is really important. And it is not about the, you know, the Pollyanna approach of, you know, oh, find a silver lining or just be happy.
Yeah.
It's not that. And I feel like gratitude is such a doorway to being in that place of really being humble about, you know, what we do have. And like you said, the choices that we have access to making every day. And it doesn't mean that our situation maybe isn't hard. Maybe we have a hard financial decision, situation, or a difficult emotional situation, a difficult relationship. Life is full of challenges. So the question then becomes, who will you be in facing those challenges?
Yes.
Are you going to be somebody who becomes so stressed and overwhelmed by them that, you know, when you go out into the world, you're honking your horn at people and you're cutting in line or you're rude to the barista, you know, or can you bring grace and goodness in even when you're facing your challenges? And like you said, I do believe that when we can stand in a place of being more aligned with our higher, you know, sense of energy and that gratitude and some grace, that, you know, somehow, some way we start to see that coming back. You know,
definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's as simple as looking, you know, the car game of looking for the white cars, and all of a sudden what you see is white cars, right?
Yes.
So what do you choose to put your, what do you choose to put your attention on? And it's okay to be angry. It's okay to grieve. But it's being conscious that you're having an angry moment.
Yeah.
And doing what you need to do to release that anger in a way that's constructive and not destructive.
Yeah.
You know, or to grieve, but not to be consumed by it. So you have your grieving moments, but then you also have tools and strategies that you use to then move yourself out of that place of grief and back into just a little bit of action, even if it's a self-care thing. Maybe you need to go get a massage. Maybe you need to go have tea with a friend.
Yeah.
So looking for those little tips and tools and strategies of, all right, I've had my poor me moment. It's totally understandable to have a poor me moment if you're going through something difficult. But if you stay stuck in that,
you know,
what you're going to get is a poor me day and a poor me life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because, days soon run into weeks and weeks and into months and months into years. And before you know it, you're some grizzled old git that is just so unhappy with life. And actually, at the end of the day, I remember your one of your favorite quotes. And I remember this because Viktor Frankl is one of my, I love that book. Is it Man's Search for Meaning? And I'm terrible at remembering book titles. Is it Man's Search for Meaning?
Yes.
Yes. And your one of your quotes is by Viktor Frankl. And if I can just find that, it is, when we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. And I mean, I would recommend anybody listening to this interview to go and find that book, Man's Search for Meaning, because it is just so profound. And when you read about the loss that he undergoes and the way he survives those prisoner of war camps, not knowing whether his family is still alive or not, it's just so empowering. And it makes so much sense when you think about it, is that if you are completely unable to change a situation, you do have the opportunity to change how you react to that situation. And I think for me, that's so empowering, because there are some things in life which really are pretty awful. And you know, whether you've experienced those awful things or not yourself, whether somebody has attacked you or abused you, you can't you know, you can't change history, unfortunately, and you can't go back and eradicate that has happened to you. But you do have the power as to how you let that affect you in your future years. And I know that's a very easy thing to say, and the work to get to that stage is extremely difficult, but it is possible. And it all comes down to a change of mentality and an empowering mindset. And I would imagine, is mindset a very large part of what you do, Tambra?
Absolutely. And it was a thing that I think turned things around for, you know, for me, you know, asking that question of who will I be now that this has happened to me and I didn't ask for it, who will I be now?
Yeah.
And what is the opportunity to create for myself going forward, given what I've experienced?
Yes.
And I think that, you know, Mansers for Meeting was one of the two books that I think was integral to my recovery from the grief. And when I read that book, my feeling was, if this man could find inner peace and freedom within the walls of a concentration camp, then who am I to not be able to do that in my life?
Yes, because it was ultimately his choice, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. How he responded to that situation was his choice. And, you know, and in fact, it kept him alive.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the other book that was really helpful was Pema Chodron's When Things Fall Apart.
Oh, I've not read that.
Yeah, that's another wonderful book. So I found both of those to be very helpful in my healing process. But ultimately asking that question of, you know, who will I be now? Because if I don't do something with the time that I've been given, and I think that was also a point of clarity. There was a moment in my grieving process where, and I still to this day don't know why the thought came in, but the thought came to me was that if Gary had been given more time, he wouldn't have been laying in bed, covering himself up with covers.
Yes.
He would have been out there living life to the fullest. He would have made the most of every moment. So who was I to not make the most of my life, and what good could I bring to the world if my destiny was to remain here and his was to leave?
Yeah.
And I think when we start to look at, you know, what are our true gifts? Because I truly believe every person has at least one gift that they bring into this world.
Mm-hmm.
So if we've been given a gift, then who am I not to share that gift? It's not mine. It's something to be given to others. Who am I to withhold that from the world?
Yeah.
If I can help somebody, you know, live a high performance life, you know, find what extraordinary is for them. You know, I work with a lot with medical experts and scientific researchers, helping them to present better so that they can create more opportunities for their work and funding and collaborations, and to move their careers ahead so they can do the healing work that they're experts in doing. If I can assist in that, who am I not to do that? You know, and take it to parenting. You know, if you're a parent and you're dealing with a major life change or challenge, and you have children, who are you not to figure out the best way to come at this, the best person you can be out of this, so that you can be the best parent you possibly can for your children?
Yeah. No, I'm with you 100% on that. With the programs that you offer, Tambra, how do you help to change people's lives? Can you sort of go into your programs in more detail to sort of give us an idea of what you offer?
Sure. There's a couple of different things that I do, and it's interesting. My life has always been like this. I've My mother one time said to me, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. And I kind of threw back at her because I was a teenager. I'm like, well, what am I not doing well? Because I was cheerleading. I was on the newspaper. I was, you know, secretary on the student council. My grades were good. I was figure skating. I had a little, you know, teenage girls especially, we can be a little chippy. So
I think you had every right to be chippy. You look at me as though you're one of those amazing people that just sort of excel at everything in life.
Not everything. I definitely have got things that I need to learn. You know, I've got learning curves and challenges. Absolutely. Like everybody, I have my strengths and I have my weaknesses, but I do like to be engaged in things. So one of the things that I did do was I actually created a program. It's available on Daily Om, which is a leading personal development website.
Yes, and, I know Daily Om.
Yeah, and it's called Grief as a Pathway to Transformation. So it's a really easy, self-guided, you know, kind of 8-week course that you download, and they've got, you know, a couple of different levels of subscription to programs that are very affordable, anywhere from, you know, $10 to $40. I think you can use $10, $25, or $40, whatever you can afford or whatever you feel like the value of the course would be for you is what you pay in that range, which I think is great. So that course is there, and it's called Grief as a Pathway to Transformation, and it's a really great way to see and work through the different steps of really being able to take, you know, what you've gone through and turn it into an opportunity for yourself as you deal with, you know, the emotions of grieving. Most people do better through the grief recovery process when they have a sense of hope.
Yes.
And they have a vision that they could turn this around. They may not be able to see how yet, but, you know, that can be helpful. And, you know, then on my website, the other great way for people just to even get some ideas is my blog. So I've got over 400 blog posts on all kinds of topics.
But you've been a busy lady.
Yes. I've had the blog going for quite some time. So there's a lot of resources people can find there. And I have
a couple of
e-books.
How do people find your blog, Tambra?
Oh, wellbeyondordinary.com.
Yeah.
And just hit blog at the top in the menu bar.
Okay. And your ebooks, I know you've got two of those, haven't you?
Yes. I have one for caregivers called Self-Care Isn't Selfish. Okay. Also would work very well for parents. So it's a bit of a prescriptive memoir. I have some, you know, bits and pieces and stories of what I went through as a caregiver. And then at the end of each chapter, there are coaching tips and tools and strategies to be able to be better at practicing self-care. And then I also have Just Diagnosed, which is for people who have been just diagnosed with cancer. And that kind of helps people understand some of the ways that you can go about approaching it more consciously, more mindfully, advocating for yourself and things like that.
Just Being Diagnosed with Cancer book, because I volunteer in hospice and you see so many people there that are just so afraid, and you know that cancer diagnosis just chucks every aspect of your life up into the air, well, as you know, and you know, it's really hard for people to know how to live life going forward from that diagnosis. So what can you sort of give us an idea of what your book's about?
The Just Diagnosed book?
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, we were living this, like, you know, absolutely wonderful life and had no expectation whatsoever that anything was wrong. And so Just Diagnosed kind of follows that journey of, you know, what it was like to get the news, and then, you know, how I approached it. So I'm a researcher by nature. Mm-hmm. I'm a list builder and things like that. So there's a lot of ways that I could be very strategic as Gary's advocate. Help guide the process. People can feel very lost within the healthcare system.
Yes.
And then also just the idea, like, defining the roles, and the roles shift and change. So, you know, initially as a caregiver, I was very, very hands-on. I handled, you know, all the blood test information and, you know, tracking his blood counts and, making sure his prescriptions were, you know, all ready for him and all that kind of stuff, dealing with the nurses, scheduling his treatments. And I was also working for him at the time. I used to be his art department coordinator. So I was managing his work life, his home life, and his health life.
Gosh.
Yeah. So I share a lot of the strategies and, you know, question lists of, you know, what questions do you ask? And, you know, so for example, a simple tip, like when we were trying to choose which expert we were going to go with, I came up with a question list and I made sure that we asked the same question in the same order for each of the three specialists that we saw, so that we could do a very clear comparison of what they were saying they could do for us and how they were going to go about doing it and who they were.
Yeah.
You know, if you go in and ask one question of one guy, you know, doctor, and, you know, different question, you know, to another doctor, it becomes very confusing and more difficult to make the decision.
Sure.
So simple, you know, it's a simple tool or tip, but it makes a big difference. It's something that people don't think about when they're under a high degree of stress. So it's a little bit of a how-to guide and, you know, and then just tips about how to manage the communication between the two of you a little bit better. Because again, when stress shows up, when people are angry, it's typically out of fear.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, so it's learning a lot of things like don't take it personal. It's not about you. And then how can you be mindful about the communication that you have? And how can you be honest when you're experiencing fear or, you know, or have a concern, instead of doing some of the things that we try to do usually to protect somebody else or because we're acting out of a place of stress.
Well, communication is what weaves us all together, isn't it? And I think, you know, if you can maintain those channels of communication, especially during something as stressful as a cancer diagnosis, then you've done a large part of the journey, because it's, you know, communication is so easy. Like you said earlier, when you're stressed, you tend to isolate yourself. You know, you shut down and you just hold on and you just, you know, you kind of, it's like a person hanging onto a rock really hard and closing their eyes and closing their ears. But if you can keep that channel of communication open, then, you know, you can support your loved one and they can support you. And I don't know, I personally, for me, one of the most important things I've achieved through helping people with the cancer diagnosis is enabling them to say the things that they were afraid to say, or whether they cried or not, because a lot of people don't say things because they're afraid to cry in front of their loved one.
Yes.
And they think, oh no, my loved one's got enough on their shoulders and I don't want to upset them even more. But sometimes those conversations, they're necessary, and tears aren't a major problem. You know, tears are a natural human reaction, and so much can come from one of those conversations when they just feel empowered enough to say, okay, I'm going to say what I want to say, and these words are so important. And, you know, although both parties might be crying at the same time, it's worth it. You know, the fact that you've had that chance to say what you wanted to say, and, you know, when your loved one then eventually dies, you know you've said what you needed to say, and you know that they heard it. And I think that is so comforting in the days and the weeks and the months and the years afterwards, because you've had that chance to talk. And it's so freeing when you can enable those channels of communication, which I think are so vital.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about leading an extraordinary life, it really is looking at the opportunity of how do I live every day, every moment with no regret?
Yeah.
Which speaks to exactly what, you know, you're talking about. You know, that's an extremely difficult example of, you know, needing to make the most of an opportunity to be open and be communicative about it, and have, you know, the courage to do so. You know, but there was a woman that a caregiver that I coached who, you know, had those concerns. She was afraid to ask her husband what his wishes were.
Yes.
And so we worked through the dialogue together. And in the end, she called me back later and she said, I just want to share with you that that was the most intimate moment of our 45-year marriage.
Oh.
That I sat down and I just asked him straight up. I said, you know, they knew he had about 6 months to live. And she said, I would like to know what you would like most in this next 6 months, you know, that we have. And all he wanted to do was go back to the town where they had raised their two daughters, and the daughters still live there, and spend some time there. And, you know, she said, so, you know, we're planning the trip and we're planning it together. And I just feel so good. And so does he.
Oh.
So, you know, there's great things that can come from what we might label difficult conversations. But there's
yes.
also ways to get coaching and get some skills and even do a little bit of role play and practice ahead of time to be prepared to engage in them in the most mindful, conscious way possible. Because we don't always come with these tools.
I think coaching is hugely important. And I think, you know, like you say, you don't come with these tools. And it's easy for us in this profession to sort of talk about this because it's something that we're faced with very regularly. But, you know, when you're not and you don't have that training, I think really that's, you know, if you're struggling, it's a really important time to approach a coach because, you know, they might help you say those things or articulate those things that you really, really know deep down that you want to articulate, but you're too afraid to say. And fear is one of those things. It's just, oh, I mean, it can just stop you from fulfilling your potential. It can stop you saying what you need to say to your loved one who's been in your life forever and you're about to lose them, and you still, because you're afraid, you're imprisoned in this box that stops you saying what you want to say. And I do think that's where coaching is so vitally, vitally important.
Yes. And, you know, we all feel fear. I think if people say that they don't feel fear,
they're lying.
Probably, yeah.
They're lying, definitely.
A little bit of a fib. You know, I still, you know, from time to time have fear when I'm going, when I'm about to take the next step and push to the next level. And I've come to recognize it as an indicator that I'm exactly on the path that I need to take, because this is where my growth is taking me. I'm going a little bit out of my comfort zone. And of course, if you have the support of a coach, you can identify, you know, what kind of tools you need and resources you need in order to move through that fear. It's not that we don't feel fear. It's that it doesn't stop us anymore.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that is such a great point. I love that. It just doesn't stop us anymore. Well, Tamara, what I'm going to do, we're coming to the end of the interview, but I really want to play your song of choice because it's such an impactful one. And it was by Beyonce, and it's called I Was Here. And then I'll just say a little bit about it when we get to the end of the song. But I just think it's one of those things that everybody should hear. And if they get the opportunity, they should watch the video too, because it's so empowering. So here we go. It's by Beyonce, and it's called I Was Here.
say, I lived each day until I died, and know that I am something in somebody's life. The hearts I have touched will be the proof that I leave, that I'm made a difference, and this world will see I was here. I lived, I loved, I was here. I did, I've done everything that I wanted, and it was more than I thought it would be. I will leave my mark so everyone will know I was here.
So that I was here, a song recorded by Beyoncé from her fourth studio album in 2011. The music video for the song was released in August the 19th, 2012, and it features Beyoncé performing the song live at the United Nations General Assembly, while images of volunteers doing humanitarian work were projected onto the screen behind her. It was donated to the World Humanitarian Day and aimed to create social media history with the aim of getting 1 billion people to share the message of doing something good for another person. Beyoncé said in a statement that it's our time to leave our mark on the world and show that we were here and that we care. And Valerie Amos, UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs, said in a statement, I hope everyone will pledge to complete at least one humanitarian action, however great or small, through the campaign website. And the UN General Assembly first designated August the 19th as World Humanitarian Day in 2008 in memory of the 2003 attack on the UN offices in Baghdad, which killed 22 people. So, Tambra, as we're coming up to the last couple of minutes of our show, I wish we had more time to talk to each other because you're just absolutely fascinating. And I know there is so much more information that our listeners could benefit from. But what would be your top three insights to leave our listeners with that they can walk away with and perhaps use in their own lives?
Well, you know, we've had a chance to talk about all three of them, which is fabulous. I would say, first of all, just remember, first of all, that you are always a choice. So how you respond in any given moment the thoughts you have, the situations that you respond to, or the relationships you have. Now, we may not be able to choose those situations that happen to us, but we can control every... Sorry, I'm actually hearing double feedback, Kate, so I'm...
Ah, okay. Yeah, you've gone a bit quiet on the mic as well. I'm wondering what's happened.
Not quite sure.
Okay.
So let me just do the best I can here while I'm hearing myself talk.
Hey, has that improved? Because it's just improved on my end.
Yes, it's gone
good.
Now.
Okay, cool. We're fixed.
Okay, great. Top three things to pull from today is, first of all, remember you're always a choice in how you respond in any moment to the thoughts you're having, the situation you're in, or the relationships. And it's really taking time to learn, what are my top values and my priorities? What do I want my life to be about? How do I want my day to go? And aligning the choices you make with those things. The second thing is, let's get real about stress. Stress is a major impediment to lowering our energy, our physical energy, our emotional energy, our ability to achieve what we want in life, our relationships. Again, it's, you know, it just has a huge domino effect. So really look at, what are some ways that each day you can become aware of what's stressing you out, and begin to get a handle on it. And there's lots of great tools and resources out there for it. Also, you're more than welcome to check out my website under assessments, under services, and you can learn more about the Energy Leadership Index assessment and see if that might be a good option for you. So that's an assessment and a debrief session that I do that helps you get a handle on the stress and really start to remember more of who you truly are so that you can achieve the extraordinary life. And the third thing is, invest in yourself. So whether it's self-care, personal growth, taking your goals to the next level, finding one thing that you really love to do in life, and maybe it's even just a hobby at this point. Maybe you love photography. You don't have to be putting your photographs into a museum in order to do extraordinary things with them. So, you know, find the resources to invest in a little bit of something for you, because you can't help others in life if your well-being is compromised or you don't continue to grow and learn. So there's value in taking some time for yourself. It is not selfish, as I say, and self-care isn't selfish. It's not selfish. It's actually a gift to others as well, because you'll be more fully expressed and more happy and more able to show up in a positive mindset to really take on and enjoy life. So those would be my top three tips and insights.
I love those, and thank you very much for sharing those with you. Everything that you've said today and mentioned, I'll link up in the show notes for today's episode. I so appreciate you coming on the show today, and I wish we had longer to talk. I love your passion, your commitment and drive to live every day to its fullest and help others do the same too. And the world definitely needs more people like you in it. Just to our listeners, all links to Tambra and me and this interview will be posted on the Flourish Therapy Facebook page, and you can find that at facebook.com/flourishtherapy.co.uk. Thank you, Tambra, for allowing us a glimpse into your life and how you've used almost the catalyst of the death of your beloved husband to make your life turn to something which is so much for the good of helping other people and inspiring other people to live their best lives possible. To our listeners, thank you all so much for being here. This was episode 16 of the Flourish and Thrive Radio Show with me, Kate Hartley, but more importantly, Tambra Lane of wellbeyondordinary.com. And I will post all the links to Tambra on the Facebook page and on my website so that you can easily access her information. And until next time, goodbye from us both.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.